Here's Pastor Brian as he continues this week's study.
Welcome to the program today, and all this week we are looking at the role of the Pope in Roman Catholic theology and then analyzing that both in light of Scripture as well as history. Our last study focused on the claims that the Roman Catholic Church makes that the Pope is the head of the Church, and that he stands in the place of Christ, and that he is infallible when he speaks ex cathedra or from the seat of the Pope on aspects of faith and morals. Let me read to you from the Roman Catholic Catechism, Lesson 2 on the Church. It says, the Church is the congregation of all those who profess the faith of Christ and partake of the same sacrament and are governed by their lawful pastors under one visible head. Who is the visible head of the Church? Our Holy Father, the Pope, Bishop of Rome, Vicar of Christ on earth, visible head of the Church. And in Roman Catholic theology, we have an invisible head who is Christ in heaven, but we have a visible head on the earth who is the Pope. And then other names that are given for the Pope, listen to this, are Sovereign Pontiff, Father of Christendom, His Holiness, Universal Apostle. The Roman Catholic Church has elevated the Pope to a place far beyond any authority that any human being in the Church should have. And they have three scriptures that they use primarily to support the idea that Peter was first given this authority, then he passed his authority on to the next Bishop of Rome, and so on, even up to the present Pope of our day. And in our program today, we'll look at the three scriptures that are used by Roman Catholic theology to support this doctrine, and then especially focus on Matthew 16 and analyze it in light of their teaching. Matthew 16 is the primary text the Roman Catholic Church uses to support the idea that Peter was the first pope, and then he passed that authority on. And that comes from verses 16 through 19, which says, and Simon Peter answered and said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus answered and said to him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then also from Luke chapter 22, verses 31 and 32, Roman Catholic theology would also use these verses to support their claim, which read this way. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. Now, simply as you read that, there's absolutely no statement of infallibility, of authority over the other apostles, of being able to be the universal apostle, His Holiness, or Sovereign Pontiff, or Father of Christendom. You just can't draw that out of these texts. Then also the third passage is John chapter 21, verses 15 through 17, where Jesus came to Peter after he denied him and restored him. These verses read this way. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him again a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. And in Roman Catholic theology, this statement to feed or to tend for my sheep, they believe that Jesus was passing on the authority to Peter to care for the entire church. Again, there is no statement made like that. Peter's role as an apostle definitely was to feed and tend for the sheep, but the other apostles had that same responsibility, as well as now it's been passed on in the scriptures to the pastors and elders and the rest of the leadership in a church. Now, what the Roman Catholic Church teaches is that Peter went to Rome in approximately 40 AD, went back to Jerusalem for a short time, and then returned to Rome, where he eventually died under the persecution of Nero. And he became the first bishop of the church at Rome, and then he passed on his authority to the rest of the succeeding bishops, on down to the current bishop or pope of the church today. And they would base that primarily on the three passages that we looked at, but the main passage would be Matthew chapter 16. What I'd like to do is look at Matthew 16 and offer you five different interpretations that have been offered by good Bible teachers throughout the history of the church. And one of the things that the Roman Catholic Church teaches is that scriptures are not to be interpreted contrary, now listen to this, to the unanimous consent of the fathers. Now, it's interesting that we do not have a unanimous consent of the fathers on this passage, on the interpretation of Matthew chapter 16. So what I'd like to do to you is offer to you five different ways in which Matthew 16 has been interpreted, other than saying that Peter himself is the first pope. Now, there are good Protestant interpreters of the Bible that would come to Matthew 16, where Jesus said in verse 18, "And I say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it." There's good Bible teachers of the present as well as in the past that actually say that here Jesus was promising something special to Peter, and the church was built on him in a unique way. And 17 of the church fathers followed this line of interpretation without giving Peter the elevated place of pope. Such church fathers as Origen, Cyprian, Jerome, Hilary, Cyril of Alexandria, Leo the Great, and Augustine. The second way this passage has been interpreted is that the message is not just to Peter, but includes all the apostles whom Peter was their representative, because he definitely was a leader among the 12. And 8 of the church fathers have suggested this interpretation. Among them are Origen, Cyprian, Jerome, Augustine, and Theodoret. And it's interesting that the first 4 that I mentioned also suggested the first interpretation. So in some of their writings, they would suggest that Peter was given a special promise here, but then also they would state that Peter is representative of the apostles. So there's no unanimous way that this passage has been interpreted. And there are good Bible interpreters today that are Protestant that would interpret Peter as representing the 12 apostles that this promise is given to. Probably the most popular way that this passage is understood is that it's not Peter or the 12 apostles that the church is built upon, but the faith or Peter's confession that he makes in verse 16, that you are Christ, the Son of the living God. And 44 of the church fathers and doctors have adopted this interpretation. And from the Eastern Church, Gregory of Nyssa, Cyril of Alexandria, and Chrysostom have adopted this viewpoint. And from the West, Hilary, Ambrose, Leo the Great, and Augustine. So it is interesting, once again, some names are mentioned that had other interpretations, and people's interpretation of passages do change as they receive more information and study a little more, and so it's not unusual for someone to hold one position about a passage and later on change that. And so what I want to bring out to you is that throughout the history of the church, let's not look back, throughout the history of the church, this passage is not the easiest to interpret, and people have understood it in different ways. Now, one of the things that gives weight to this argument that it's the faith of Peter's confession is the grammar that's involved here. Because where Jesus says to Peter in verse 18, where he says, "And I say to you that you are Peter," that is the Greek term Petros, which is masculine. Then he says, "And on this rock," which is a feminine term, Petra, he changes the statement, "I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it." So here we definitely have a play on words, and many would look at the grammar and say it's clear that this rock is not in reference to Peter, because he changes the word. And basically, the word Petros is a small stone or a pebble, and is masculine in gender, but the term "this rock" is Petra, is feminine, and it's more like a huge rock, like the Rock of Gibraltar, and saying upon this rock, the solid foundation, I will build my church, not in reference to Peter, but in reference to the confession that he made as Christ being the Son of the living God. The fourth interpretation, which was supported by 16 different church fathers and doctors was another term for a church leader or a theologian of the past, that the rock that is mentioned in verse 18 is actually Christ himself, that Peter made the statement, "But on this rock," and then Christ was referring to his own life, death, burial, and resurrection, and on who he was as the divine Son of God. That's what the church is going to be built upon. And that is supported elsewhere in Scripture, where Peter, in his first epistle, says that Christ is that rock. And in our study tomorrow, we'll look at more scriptures which point to Jesus being the foundation of the church, rather than Peter, or rather than the Pope being the foundation. Then the fifth way this has been interpreted throughout the history of the church is that those who make the same confession that Peter made become the living stones as part of the Church of Jesus Christ. So the five ways that this has been interpreted historically is, one, Peter is the rock that the church was built upon. Two, that it's built on the 12 apostles and Peter was the chief representative of the apostles. Three, the faith of Peter's confession that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Four, the rock that Peter confessed is Christ himself. Or five, those who make the same confession are those which this rock is in reference to. And so it's clear that throughout the history of the church, there's not been one way to interpret this passage unanimously. And all five of these have some degree of truth to them as you look at the context. And in our study tomorrow, we'll examine what truly the church is built upon. And we'll see that it's not built upon a man. It's not built upon Jesus passing on some sort of infallibility to an individual. We'll cover the scriptures to make sure this is absolutely clear. And in our study tomorrow, I'll offer you 15 different scriptural proofs that Peter was not the first pope. If you'd like to get in touch with us here at Solid Ground, you could wait for the phone number that'll be mentioned at the end of the program, or you could contact us on our website at www.calvarylm.org.